Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Over the past 5 years, San Francisco's eviction rate has increased by over 54%. Evictions are at their highest rate in a decade, according to the San Francisco Anti-Displacement Coalition. It is now common to hear about friends or colleagues who've either been evicted or have experienced a massive rent increase. And this is happening all over the Bay Area. The battle over rent control, rising rents, and evictions have become a rallying cry for thousands of renters who've been pressuring their cities to pass rent control laws, pay lawyer fees for eviction cases, and provide more affordable housing. From 2000 to 2013, the Bay Area lost about 100,000 units that were deemed affordable to renters. That's according to Real Answers. Bay Area rents have soared 46% over the last 4 years. On today's Your Call, we are talking about how renters can protect themselves in a volatile and changing rental market. How can Bay Area renters protect themselves, and what are cities doing to protect them? Also, what is the state of rent control in the Bay Area? We are seeing some hostile fights taking place in Richmond and Alameda currently over this issue. And joining us to talk about what is happening in the Bay Area with housing and rent control is Dean Preston. He is founder and executive director of Tenants Together. It's a nonprofit dedicated to defending and advancing the rights of California tenants to safe, decent, and affordable housing. Hi, Dean. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
It's great to have you. And we're also joined by Darwin Bond Graham, an award-winning reporter with the East Bay Express. Darwin has been writing about evictions and rent increases in the East Bay. Hi, Darwin. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, good morning.
Nice to have you. So I want to start off with you, Dean. You are an attorney with expertise on tenants' rights, and you have been holding these tenant rights boot camps. I went to one of your boot camps in San Francisco. It was a packed house. You said that the reason why so many renters are losing their homes is because they don't know their rights. Does that still apply today?
Well, that applies in certainly in San Francisco and in a lot of places. And those boot camps, I teamed up with the San Francisco Tenants Union to do those. And certainly in rent control cities where tenants have some protections under local law, often the way that speculators get people out of their homes is by not informing them of their rights and actually misrepresenting what their rights are. So tenants, particularly in rent control cities, need to learn their rights and make sure they're not displaced in violation of local law. In other parts of the Bay Area, in fact, in most of the Bay Area, the biggest reason that tenants are pushed out is a combination. They don't know their rights, but they also don't have very many rights, because if they don't have a local rent control law, their landlord can double their rent. And that's why we see such a rise in call for rent control in communities across the Bay Area.
So San Francisco does have rent control. What other cities have rent control?
Oakland, Berkeley, East Palo Alto are some of the Bay Area cities that have rent control. Richmond recently passed rent control, but the landlords there, the California Apartment Association, did a referendum that effectively repealed that law for now. We expect to see a wave of ballot measures in November 2016 in cities across the Bay Area calling for rent control.
That is Dean Preston. He is an attorney with expertise on tenants' rights and executive director of Tenants Together. Darwin Bond Graham is a reporter with the East Bay Express. And Darwin, you have been writing about evictions and rent increases in the East Bay. And one of your latest pieces is pretty heartbreaking. You write that 9 years ago, Richard Wingart moved into a 5-unit rent-controlled apartment building in North Oakland. He paid his rent on time, obeyed the rules, and then the owner of the building converted it into condos, and the new landlord doubled his rent and hired an attorney who specializes in evictions to push him out. How common is this in the East Bay?
I think it's pretty common, but no one actually knows. No one really has any good numbers, because unlike San Francisco, where there are, joint city-county agencies that track evictions and track condo conversions and these sorts of things. In Oakland and much of the East Bay, we don't have that kind of government infrastructure in place, so we really don't have any good statistics on the numbers of people getting displaced right now.
And what is the status of this case? Because according to your reporting, Richard Wingart either had to pay the increase in rent or leave his place in November, and he was actually starting to lay down in his back seat to figure out how it would feel if he were to lose his home because he'd have nowhere to go but his car.
Yeah, he was really preparing for homelessness, and I have not actually checked in with him in a couple weeks, and so I don't know what the status of his case is, but that that apartment building, it represents on so many levels the fact that, you know, a lot of tenants don't know their rights, and that even when tenants have rights, they're often thrown out by building owners who, you know, simply do things that are against the law or that violate statutes. Like, Oakland has a condo conversion ordinance that should have prevented this five-unit building from being turned into apartments, but the previous owner was able to just turn it into a four-unit apartment building and then convert it into condos. That should have never happened in the first place.
And so, Dean, what is happening is some people are getting these three-day notices to or quit. There are these letters that are being put on the front doors of homes. And so, you know, just to let people know who don't have experience with this, I mean, you have 3 days to make a decision. And in some cases, these letters are put on your front door on Friday. So you have to quickly find a lawyer if you don't know your rights and if you don't know what to do.
Well, that's right. The timeline is very tight for most evictions. And what we're seeing in cities, particularly in the rent-controlled cities, is a rise of what we call gotcha evictions. These are evictions that are over either fabricated violations of the lease or really trivial or minor lease violations. This is what's surging in San Francisco and has been since last year. There's so much money for landlords to make if they can drive out long-term low-rent tenants and replace them with higher-rent tenants. And so they have increasingly been using three-day notices that allege either non-payment of rent, but more often it's of some kind of violation of a lease. And it's often something completely trivial. There was a high-profile case earlier this year in Chinatown that was on the front page of the Examiner, in which a building full of tenants in Chinatown, mostly seniors, were being evicted for hanging their laundry on their porch areas outside their apartments. This was considered such a horrible breach of their lease that they were being evicted. The tenants protested that. Those were ultimately rescinded, but most tenants who are faced with these kind of three-day notices don't have access to attorneys, don't know what their rights are, and often simply leave their home.
And there are organizations in San Francisco, for example, that help tenants, but based on what I have heard, the lines are so long and the counselors are totally overwhelmed. And so if you have 3 days, I mean, your options are pretty limited. What are people doing to learn more about their rights?
Well, there are great tenant counseling organizations. As you say, they're swamped. The rising rents have really fueled this incentive for unscrupulous landlords to try to get folks out, and they're coming up with anything to do so. There are some great organizations in San Francisco. People who have actually been served with lawsuits can go to the with eviction lawsuits. They're called unlawful detainer cases. Can go to the Eviction Defense Collaborative in San Francisco. There are other organizations like San Francisco Tenants Union and Causa Justa Just Cause and the Housing Rights Committee and many others that provide counseling. But folks will get advice, will get guidance on how to push back, but ultimately the tenants have to have quite a bit of initiative and be willing to go through a very stressful process of asserting their rights to make sure that they can defend their homes and stay in San Francisco.
Dean Preston is the founder and executive director of Tenants Together. It's a nonprofit dedicated to defending and advancing the rights of California tenants. He's an attorney with expertise on tenants' rights. Darwin Bond Graham is an award-winning reporter with the East Bay Express. He's been writing about evictions, rent increases, and rent control in the East Bay. And if you have a question or a comment about What is it like to be a renter, and how to do you know your rights as a renter? Have you been kicked out? Have you experienced a massive rent increase? Just to let you know what's going on, I have an 84-year-old friend whose building was built in 1980, and so she missed rent control by 1 year. She's been in her same building for 23 years, and she just got a triple rent increase. And these are very common stories. So if you have a story you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you. What is it like in your area? Do you have rent control? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And Darwin, what are you hearing in the East Bay? I mean, you've been writing about specific people who have had rent increases or have received eviction notices. And what are they doing to learn more about their rights? Are there a lot of nonprofits people are going to in the East Bay?
There are. There's a similar number of nonprofit organizations that do advocacy. There's also, you know, some legal clinics that will help people out if they've been hit with an unlawful detainer or something like that. But really, the number of nonprofit groups that will help people who are facing displacement, these are very small in number compared to the number of real estate speculators and attorneys who work with real estate investors. So there's a huge imbalance of resources for renters who are going before, you know, the rent arbitration program in Oakland, for example, or the rent board, or who are going to court over an eviction dispute.
And you wrote about a 5-unit rent-controlled apartment, and it was bought by Arlen Chu, an investor, last February. And how common is this? I mean, when you're talking about these people who are being pushed out or their rent is increasing, how common is it for them to have to deal with an investor rather than a mom-and-pop landlord?
In Oakland, it's extremely common because, you know, you have to go back and look at the recent history of what occurred here. We had, you know, in 2007, 2008, the financial crisis, which, you know, was part of this larger foreclosure crisis, and we had literally, you know, thousands and thousands of single-family homes and apartment buildings, small apartment buildings in the East Bay and especially in Oakland. They were foreclosed on. They became bank-owned properties. And the main parties buying these up for years on end, all the way up through about 2013, were investors who were buying them as rental properties. And with a single-family home, for example, you have a special problem here with regard to tenant protections, because single-family homes are, you know, exempt from rent control, and so the rents on these, you know, literally tens of thousands of new rental units in the East Bay, many of them in East Oakland, these are units that are exempt from the city's rent control laws, and so we're seeing families that rent these homes, they face large rents right off the bat, and then the owners can increase the rents pretty much at any rate they want.
And Dean, what are you seeing just in terms of the differences between major investors and small, you know, landlords, like someone who's owned the building for decades because it's been in their family, for example?
Well, I think the phenomenon that Darwin describes is absolutely the case in large chunks of the Bay Area. This is really an era of the rise of investor landlords playing a much more significant role. And we're not just talking about limited liability companies that scoop up 5-10 properties. We're also talking about Wall Street giants, multi-billion-dollar companies like Blackstone or its property management arm, Invitation Homes, that are buying up tens of thousands of properties nationwide and in California as well. We did a report on that earlier this year. And what's different with a lot of these investors, as Darwin just pointed out in that case of a single-family home is they're actually buying up these single-family homes. A lot of these were formerly foreclosed properties, and you have now basically Wall Street landlords increasingly driving a new market of single-family home rentals. And it's significant because these are not landlords that have any connection to the community whatsoever, and they are simply holding these assets to profit off them and then at some point to reposition and probably do mass bulk selling of those and have huge impact on communities where they're investing.
I just read a piece over at Business Insider. Blackstone is now the largest owner of real estate in the world.
That's right. I mean, it's jaw-dropping when you think of the size of that company. And they're not the only ones. And there's been a rise in the last couple of years of actually securitizing rent payments. It's a whole new phenomenon that sounds very familiar to what precipitated the mortgage meltdown in the first place. But you have these companies are actually slicing and dicing the rental revenue as an asset to speculate on and trade on the market.
Dean Preston is Executive Director of Tenants Together, and Darwin Bond Graham is a reporter with the East Bay Express. Today we are talking about what is happening to Bay Area renters. So many people are receiving massive rent increases or eviction notices, and in some cases, many cases, they have 3 days to figure out their rights and to hire a lawyer. And in some cases, lawyers are $300 an hour. So we'd love to hear from you. What has your experience been like? What is it like where you live? If you have a story to share, give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Stephen in San Francisco. Hi, Stephen. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Appreciate that. I live up in Russian Hill, and we're sort of a medium-sized apartment building, and what we've seen, it's all rent-controlled. In addition to have one of your guests talked about the financial instrument, Wall Street investors, we've seen a lot of houses and buildings go that way. But with us, it's all long-term, 25-year-plus people, and they've just sort of declared war on not doing anything, no services, and it's very vexing. And a lot of these people are old. They don't use the Internet. They're not sophisticated. And you know, I'm the youngest person there, and I'm like 50, so it's not very good at all. And we had someone die in the building, and they basically did nothing. They didn't clean up or anything, and we were forced to smell, you know, the after effects of that for about 3 months. And that's just business as usual, and that's just how they roll. And it's a huge company that owns this, and they have properties all over Chinatown and the city.
Stephen, have they owned this building since you moved in?
Yes, it's actually, we have an absentee landlord, okay, and we believe it's a trust fund. We couldn't even find the owner when we had these problems. And can I don't know if I can mention the name of the management company, if that's okay. They're called Hogan Invest. And basically, they started out as a legitimate property management outfit, probably in the 30s and 40s. And altruistically, they actually, when the Chinese couldn't buy properties in their own name because of the discrimination laws, they would hold the title for their properties. So and they ended up becoming managers. But the people that own the company are gone. I don't know who really runs it now. They don't. They still name that company. It's still the same name, but they have a huge amount of properties they manage, and they basically don't want to do anything if you're a tenant.
So basically, if you need a repair, you're not asking them to do it?
Well, they'll get around to repairs, but we had, you know, people breaking into the building, people living in the building that weren't tenants, like in the basement, and they did absolutely nothing. They were breaking into our building literally every night. And they did nothing. A gentleman died in our building. They did nothing. I had to call. I had to go deal with the coroner, you know, everything. It was unbelievable. They did nothing. They let us smell, you know, a decomposed body after they took it away. They didn't clean anything. But we had a long-term couple there. His partner passed away, okay, And then they refused to take a check from this gentleman that had been there living there 30 years.
Hmm.
You know, they were on him with 4 feet to kick him out.
Well, Stephen, what a horrible story. Thank you for calling in about that. Dean, what advice would you have for Stephen?
Well, obviously a tragic situation with his neighbor, and sounds terrible. I think that any kind of efforts to get a landlord basically to do their job, whether it's to make sure that a property is secure or to take care of habitability issues, the first stop is usually a tenant counseling organization, either San Francisco Tenants Union Housing Rights Committee, Casa Justa Just Cause, or a number of other organizations in the city, and basically try to force the landlord to do their job. I will say, you know, encouraging is when you hear a story like Stephen's, just what he said in the beginning about how many long-term tenants there are in the building. I think we often focus a lot on the displacement of people from San Francisco, but what we need to take time to sometimes recognize as well is the number of long-term rent-controlled tenants who the only reason they are able to remain in the city of San Francisco is because of rent control. And one of the things that struck me at the tenant rights boot camps that we did in neighborhoods was how many of the rent control tenants who have been in their place, some of them for decades, are really holding on, very anxious about being displaced,
right.
But thanks to the rent control law, are still here in San Francisco. And I think we sometimes take that for granted, and I know we do a lot of work with tenants in other cities that don't have rent control, and many are envious of having a system that actually does provide some stability for renters.
60% of San Franciscans currently rent.
Right. It's a little over that.
Do we know what percentage of those live in rent-controlled buildings?
Well, it's 170,000, approximately 170,000 rent-controlled units. So the vast majority of tenants in San Francisco are living in rent-controlled units. There are exemptions for single-family homes, for condominiums, and for properties built after 1979.
Right. All right. Well, thank you again for calling in, Stephen. Let's go next to Jeff in Berkeley. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to the show. Hello, Jeff. Did we lose Jeff? You know, the other thing I wanted to ask you, Dean, this was brought up with Stephen. I've been hearing from a lot of people in rent-controlled buildings in San Francisco who are so fearful about getting maybe Ellis acted, for example, that they're not asking their landlord to do any repairs because they just don't want to rock the boat. Are you also hearing this?
Yeah, we hear that quite a bit, and the fear is real, and people are afraid of not just of rocking the boat, as you say, but just of what's going to happen. We're in a situation in San Francisco and in many communities in the Bay Area where getting evicted and getting displaced, that's bad enough, but these days it amounts to a banishment. And people who are displaced know that they're not finding a home in another neighborhood in San Francisco or nearby. They are going to have to leave the city and probably the Bay Area. So the tensions and the concerns are very high. And fear of losing rent-controlled housing is really very significant for folks all over San Francisco. I think that people generally are still well advised to assert their rights. And most of the time, if a landlord is not making repairs or is not fulfilling their obligations as a landlord, that's not going to be sustainable over the long haul. That's not going to create a healthy living space for families, for individuals. And there are state law protections against retaliation. So we generally advise that if people are going to assert their rights as tenants, that they do it in a way that's in writing, that's formal, and that they have proof of. Because if they do that and the landlord turns around and responds with a rent increase notice or with an eviction notice, then they'll have some proof that it was retaliatory and illegal. Often tenants who don't want to rock the boat make their complaints and requests informally. They just pick up the phone, they call the landlord, they ask for repairs. They're still rocking the boat. They're just not doing it in a way that they can prove. And so we really recommend that tenants do it in a way they can document.
So always put it in writing and keep a copy of your letter. That is Dean Preston, founder and executive director of Tenants Together. Darwin Bond Graham is a reporter with the East Bay Express. If you have any questions or comments about renting and rent control in the Bay Area, we'd love to hear from you. We'll be back after this.
Local Public Radio, KALW, San Francisco. If you'd like to join today's conversation on your call with Rose and her guests, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK. Coming up at 11 o'clock from the BBC, World Have Your Say. At noon today, Backstory, and this afternoon at 1, Alternative Radio here on KALW San Francisco, a listener-supported community broadcast service.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about transportation planning in a growing Bay Area. If you drive or if you take the bus, you know that traffic has gone from bad to worse. The Bay Area freeway commute is moving at its slowest pace in over a decade. Congestion out of San Francisco used to start at around 3, and now it starts at 1:30. So transportation advocates say we need better public transit, more carpool lanes. But who's really coming up with real solutions? Who's really taking this issue seriously? That's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.com. Today, we are talking about how Bay Area renters can protect themselves in the most expensive housing market in the country. What is the state of rent control? If you have a story or a question, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. Intense battles around rent control are taking place in Richmond and Alameda. There's a story about what's happening in Alameda in today's Chronicle. So what is it like in your area? Do you have rent control? If you're a renter, what has your experience been like? And if you're a landlord and you want to weigh in on this, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Suzanne in San Francisco. Hi, Suzanne. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Suzanne. I want to say you always do such a great job, first of all. And then I would like to tell you that I do live in San Francisco, and I've been a renter there for almost 20 years. And my landlord has never done anything as far as fixing my place whatsoever. There was three flats there. He did get two people out. I don't know how, but he did. And he was threatening me, and his wife ended up putting a gas can by the water heater and said that I did it. And I have gotten a lawyer to help me with not letting them kick me out. And then she also, I've never been able to be in the backyard because it's the earth is somehow contaminated. And they're trying to make my life a living hell, but I'm sticking it out because I can't afford to go anywhere else in the city. I work in the city. I cannot move anywhere else. And any other recourses, I have mold in my bathroom. There's things that need to be done, but I also do not get anything done, and I don't want to rock the boat.
So thank you for calling in, Suzanne. So you have a lawyer, and you're currently fighting the situation. Dean, what are your thoughts on this and planting gas canisters? Is this something you've heard before?
Well, not that specifically, but it's all different types of harassment, and we hear pretty outrageous stories. So at this point, nothing shocks us. I'm glad she has a lawyer. I think that it's really important that people understand that they shouldn't be forced to choose between an affordable home and repairs. You know, the California law is very clear that a landlord has to make repairs. There are laws specifically against harassment and, as well. And so there is recourse that people have to getting repairs done and to taking on landlords who harass them. And so I'm again glad that Suzanne found a lawyer. I mean, that's a very hard thing, and one of the frustrations for tenants is they often can't afford to hire a lawyer, and there are very limited legal services available. But in extreme situations like what's described, tenants need to be able to access an attorney and take their landlord on.
So how hard is it to get an attorney? Because in some cases, lawyers are charging $300. I mean, these are lawyers that protect tenants, and it's $300 an hour. Is that about average?
There's different types of cases. It's extremely hard to find eviction defense services and full scope representation to defend against evictions, and that can require a tenant to pay hundreds of dollars an hour unless they're able to get someone through a nonprofit organization. There are other situations in which a landlord fails to take care of habitability conditions, mold, tenants may get sick from that, or there's other housing conditions that are at issue. And in some of those cases, tenants can try to find private landlords who are willing to take those kind of cases on a contingency fee basis so that they don't have to pay high fees. Usually it makes sense, though, to start with a tenant counseling organization, talk with basically a peer counselor, explore options, and then see whether someone needs to try to find an attorney.
And Dean, at the boot camp that I attended in the Upper Haight, you said that government officials are not treating this as a crisis or a state of emergency. You said that San Francisco City Hall has the tools to deal with this. For example, it could guarantee that every tenant has the right to counsel.
Well, that's right, and San Francisco could do that. Any city could do that, and I think it's important to understand that often we talk about a housing crisis as if everyone agrees that there's a crisis here. There are significant, powerful players in the real estate industry, right, the landlords, realtors, real estate speculators, for whom there's no crisis whatsoever. They are absolutely content to keep the status quo. They're making a fortune off of rising rents and displacement, and they're determined to keep it that way. So there have been efforts from City Hall to rein in some of the abuses. There was the recent Eviction Protection 2.0 law that passed in San Francisco. We see similar efforts at the local level in cities around the Bay Area. But there's far more that City Hall could do and should do in both in San Francisco and in cities across the Bay.
Darwin, are any government officials in the East Bay tackling this issue to provide counsel to tenants?
I'm not sure about providing legal counsel to tenants. That's still in the East Bay. That's still mainly left up to nonprofit organizations, or you know, a tenant has to go out and find their own attorney, and that's expensive. But there's definitely a lot of interest in the cities in the East Bay to pass new laws to create affordable housing and to protect affordable housing. So there's a lot of momentum there right now.
All right. So Dean, the only thing Suzanne can do is to keep her lawyer and just keep fighting this.
Well, that's right, and if there are conditions like mold and other things that she described, the San Francisco Department of Building Inspection can be called. They'll come do an inspection. They'll cite the landlord. I don't know if that's been done in her case, but that's certainly a resource. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Rosa, your questions about the right to counsel, I mean, there have been what I would say are baby steps in that direction. A couple of years ago, San Francisco pass what they call the right to counsel, but it's extremely limited, funded with hundreds of thousands, not the millions that's required. And I think we need to look at the right to counsel in the context of really a growing movement to look at a civil right to counsel, right? If people are charged with a crime, they have a right to an attorney to represent them. However, if people are threatened with losing their homes or other critical human needs, it's very limited In the circumstances in which they will be provided with an attorney. We really need to rethink that, especially in the midst of an eviction crisis.
Dean Preston is founder and executive director of Tenants Together, and Darwin Bond Graham is a reporter with the East Bay Express. Today we're talking about how Bay Area renters can protect themselves in the most expensive housing market in the country. So many people are getting massive rent increases and eviction notices. And thanks again for calling, Suzanne. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's go next to Jeff in Berkeley. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I live in Berkeley in what's called a golden duplex, and I've been hearing all kinds of contradictory information, you know, whether it's from the rent board or from a lawyer I talked to briefly. I'm not in crisis at the moment, but when my aging landlord, whom I get along with very well, dies, there's a living trust, as I understand it, or at least the tax, you know, database says it's held in a trust. You know, with, there are three kids there, and he knows that the kids are going to sell when he's gone. I'm wondering, since it's rent exempt because it's been 50% owner occupied since last 50 years, what happens either during the period, you know, when the kids take over, you know, who are on the trust, you know, do I have any rights? It's definitely not rent controlled. Mm. And also, if they want to raise the rent to push me out, how fast can they do that? But mostly, I want to find out where I can get good information on, you know, the rules that govern, quote, golden duplexes in Berkeley. Hello?
Thank you. Dean, do you have any suggestions for Jeff in Berkeley?
Sure. So I would say, first of all, you want to make sure it's exempt. I don't know the details of Berkeley law around that exemption, but you would just want to make sure that it was exempt. The Berkeley Rent Board's a resource for that. Or more generally, and I would say for any of your callers, we have a statewide hotline, which is 888-495-8020, 888-495-8020, and we can, well, we have counselors, and they can direct you to resources in your area. I think that the one point that Jeff makes that really probably applies to a lot of your listeners is what happens when there's a change of ownership, either because an owner dies or because the property is sold, and legally, nothing changes when property ownership changes and there's a tenancy there. But as a practical matter, the time of change of ownership is when we see a lot of problems. It's often when real estate speculators who don't want to be landlords are coming in trying to convert the property. And it's really the time in the landlord-tenant relationship where tenants need to be most careful, learn their rights, and be prepared for what may be some problems. And that's what's happening certainly in San Francisco and other cities. And some folks enjoy a decent relationship with their long-term landlord, and then that changes after either the landlord passes away, the next generation inherits it, or someone comes in and buys the property. Mm-hmm. So I would really urge folks, I think it's great that Jeff's calling in at this point in time and learning his rights before there's a change in the ownership of that property.
Well, thank you, Jeff. I hope this helped out. And we have links over at yourcallradio.org. Thanks for calling in. Let's go next to Martin in San Francisco. Hi, Martin. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, my question is, my building recently got bought, and some of the units are being remodeled. And the attitude that I'm being greeted with is that I'm not going to be here long. Hmm. And nothing actually specifically has been given to me in writing, but I wonder what rights I have.
So
it's a rent-controlled building.
It's a rent-controlled building in San Francisco that was recently bought. Martin?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a rent-controlled building in San Francisco that was recently bought.
Yes.
Okay. Dean?
Well, I think that that feeling that Martin is experiencing is very common. The feeling that, that remodeling or construction work that's happening in the building is being done without regard to the rights of the existing tenants, and that there's almost this assumption that the new owner has they're going to get tenants out. And in a lot of cases, they do, because tenants don't know their rights. And so they do buyouts, they threaten evictions, they get tenants to move who don't have to move. And that's also sometimes done through construction work, and it can be very difficult to live next to extensive remodeling work. One resource for tenants in that situation is that in San Francisco, in order to do that kind of work, an owner has to get permits from the Department of Building Inspection. And those permits can be appealed if there's concern that the work is going to be disruptive to existing tenants. And I would recommend that that anyone in a building where there's remodeling work keep on top of whether permits have been applied for. And you can do that either online at the Department of Building Inspection's website or by contacting them. And there's a 15-day period once the permits are issued in which tenants can appeal those permits if they have concerns about how that work will impact them.
But again, to do that, would you need a lawyer?
No,
okay.
Don't need a lawyer for that.
You know, Dean, I just want to ask you, I mean, and also Darwin, because you've interviewed people, so many people are feeling powerless. And I'm finding that because people are just trying to stay where they are, we're not really talking about the emotional aspect of all this and how it really does take a toll on your emotional well-being. I mean, we have an email from John who writes about being thrown out of San Francisco via the Ellis Act. He says that he climbed out of a window to escape a fire. He says that this gave him major anxiety every day, major stress. I mean, I'm hearing this from so many people who are either receiving rent increases, eviction notices, or just afraid that at any day they're going to get a letter on their front door. Darwin? Or Dean, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you're absolutely right, and it creates enormous stress. And that stress has direct impacts, and particularly on folks who are already more vulnerable. For example, seniors who have lived in their homes for a long time, people with mental health conditions, and other folks for whom the idea of moving and the stress of eviction is just is too much to bear. And you talk to anyone who does this work, myself included, we've all experienced situations where we're working with tenants in a building and someone dies mm-hmm. from the stress of eviction. This is literally a life and death issue for people, and I think for folks who haven't gone through eviction, it's very difficult to understand the extent to which this unsettles someone, affects their life and their health. It affects your ability to sleep, which then affects your ability to function, whether it's in work or in school or wherever you are. So this is one of the worst things that can happen to people. That said, people are not powerless to fight back, and it's been very inspiring to see the level of activism and the victories against a lot of these evictions when people are able to band together with their neighbors and fight back. There have been some very high-profile court victories against Ellis Act evictions in the last year. There's been amazing activism at the grassroots level in San Francisco, Eviction Free San Francisco, and the San Francisco Anti-Displacement Coalition have really been able to do some incredible work to push back against evictions, and we're seeing similar activism in communities throughout the Bay Area, like the Alameda Renters Coalition, and in Richmond with activists there, and Santa Rosa, and other cities with hundreds of people going to City Hall to demand protections. So the odds are still stacked against tenants. There's a power imbalance. The real estate industry has created the Ellis Act and other loopholes to get people out, but they are also being challenged regularly, and there's case after case of tenants pushing back and winning and staying in their homes.
And Darwin, there are some examples in the East Bay Dean was talking about. Do you have any that you'd like to share?
Examples of health issues or examples of victories?
Victories.
You know, I think it's actually a bit early in the East Bay to talk about victories at this point. There's a number of campaigns right now to strengthen public policy in the city of Oakland. For example, you know, we're talking about strengthening the rent board here by increasing fees that pay for hearing staff who, you know, these are the people who arbitrate disputes between tenants and landlords over rent increases. And that, so the Oakland Rent Board is currently saying they don't have the resources to do that work. So that remains to be seen whether that will be, that item will actually come before the city council here and be voted on, and whether they'll strengthen that program. In Berkeley, you know, the city council is virtually united in trying to strengthen laws there that protect tenants. They've gone so far as to even, you know, put a resolution up calling for the repeal of the Costa Hawkins Act, because they see it as, you know, just such a toxic law in terms of the way that it excludes so many rental units from rent control protections. So there's just a lot of proposals coming before the legislative bodies of, like, the different cities in the East Bay right now, and tenants groups are, you know, gearing up to try to fight and win those strengthened policies. But as you see recently in Alameda, where, you know, a tenant's advocate was literally slammed to the floor by a police officer, you know, leaving blood all over the floor. It, you know, that's symbolic kind of where we're at in the East Bay. There aren't a lot of protections. This is a fight, and it's just starting to gear up.
And that's 68-year-old tenant advocate Bob Davis, who was slammed to the ground. This was a seven-hour hearing, which ended in two arrests and a 65-day moratorium in Alameda. This has been covered in the Chronicle today. 75,000 people in Alameda rent their homes. So that's Alameda. Richmond, rent control will most likely be on the ballot next year. And you mentioned the Costa Hawkins bill, which was passed 20 years ago in California. It banned rent control on new buildings constructed in California and eliminated the ability of cities to maintain rent control on all vacant units. And I didn't know this, Darwin, but in your reporting, you say that Governor Jerry Brown opposes rent control.
Yeah, well, pretty much a lot of the most powerful elected officials are opposed to reforming some of these. There were a number of laws that were really game changers. You know, there was Prop 13, there was Costa Hawkins. These laws are pretty harmful to tenants. They withdrew a lot of protections, and they pretty much allowed, they fostered this atmosphere in the real estate market where it's kind of a feeding frenzy. People see huge profits to be gained from acquiring rental properties, pushing out long-term tenants. And a lot of statewide elected officials really aren't on the side of tenants here. There's a lot of real estate money that goes to funding electoral campaigns at the statewide level and the local level. So, yeah, it's really not surprising.
We have two emails from Marin. Zephyr says, do your guests have any advice for people like myself who live in a non-rent controlled city? I live in Marin County and my rent has increased by hundreds of dollars in 2 years. I'm just about to be priced out and I've been there for years. We have another caller, person who's emailing who wants to be anonymous, says, I would have called in, but my landlord probably listens to this show and I don't want this aired. I live in Marin, which has no renter's rights. A long-term tenant, I paid good rent for a studio that was not up to code. It had rodents and leaks for over a decade. Suddenly, the market gets hot. My landlord puts me through 2 months of hell upgrading the place on the outside so it could be brought up to code. Hits me for a 30% increase, $400 more a month. I let him know that would be a hardship, but he doesn't care. It's an outrage. All I can do is suck it up since I've been paying $2,000 for a studio. That's what it's going for in Marin now. I've inquired with an attorney, but until people in Marin band together, what rights do we have? Dean, any advice there?
Well, sure. My advice to both of those folks is pass rent control. And I just want to reiterate this idea. You know, rent control is not just about rents. Rent control is a system of regulation designed to provide stability for renters. And I think, you know, what these massive rent increases in Marin and across the Bay Area are really showing is that the idea that landlords will somehow self-regulate will not happen, that the only way to rein in a hot real estate market these massive rent increases and evictions is through a rent control law. It's doable. The myth that is out there from the real estate industry is that rent control is very controversial and divisive and all that. The only people generally who don't like rent control are the people who are profiting from unlimited rents. That's the landlords and the real estate agents and the speculators. If you talk to homeowners and if you talk to renters in most Bay Area cities, rent control is quite popular. So as Darwin points out, there's a lot of money in politics from the real estate industry, and they are determined to keep a completely unregulated market for rents and for evictions. But for folks in Marin and folks getting hundreds of dollars of rent increases, that's totally unacceptable. And a lot of our – I just want to say one more thing, which is that a lot of our callers to our hotline are shocked to find out that their landlord is allowed to raise the rent this much. People assume at some level there must be some controls, and they're shocked to learn that in California there's absolutely no control over the rent. And the good news is that the California Supreme Court has recognized that cities have every right to pass local rent control laws, and I have yet to hear a good reason why any city in the Bay Area, given this real estate market, should not be passing a local rent control law. It's essential.
But this is a major uphill battle, right? Because Richmond passed a rent control law, and then Darwin, just quickly, what happened?
Well, what happened was the California Apartment Association went out and started gathering signatures and putting pressure on the city council to basically succeeded in repealing that law. And so now it's unclear whether, you know, Richmond is going to have rent control. And you know, you see it in Alameda also. The mere mention that Alameda, the city of Alameda, should have rent control, it drew hundreds of tenants advocates to that city council meeting. But it also drew probably 100 or so landlords who are very organized. They got there early. They sort of monopolized the seats in the room. You know, you can go to Oakland City Council meetings. You can go to the Alameda County Board of Supervisors meetings. Any of these legislative meetings, you'll see a very well-organized real estate industry that includes landlords and developers and their attorneys. And they're definitely willing and able to push back against any kinds of price controls on rent.
Well, we'll have to do another show because we are slammed with emails and phone calls. Darwin Bond-Graham is a reporter with the East Bay Express. Dean Preston is founder and executive director of Tenants Together. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, we'll discuss transportation planning in a growing Bay Area. Traffic has gone from bad to worse. The Bay Area freeway commute is moving at its slowest pace in over a decade. Congestion out of San Francisco used to start at 3 o'clock, and now it starts at 1:30. Transportation advocates are calling for better public transit and more carpool lanes. Who's coming up with real solutions, and are city officials taking this seriously? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer. Matt Martin is executive producer, and Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.